This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Tyler Siski. Tyler, how's it going, man? Good to talk with you.
Going good, brother. How are you?
I am doing well. So you will be at the Memphis Touchdown Club, the Hilton, coming up on Monday. You excited for it? Hyped up?
I know, man. It comes up quick. I was sitting there and I feel like it was scheduled a long time ago, and now here we are. So we'll be there Monday.
Yes, sir, and you're going to have a lot to talk about because I think this week with SEC spring meetings, a lot has been said, and people are opining a whole lot. you have our guy, SEC Commissioner Greg Sankey, up there talking about the future of college football and college football playoff and where he thinks this thing needs to head, and it feels like there is a lot of pushback to what he had to say, because I think he mentioned the ACC and the Big 12 putting out press releases after the straight seating rule in the college football playoff. He said, I don't need to hear about good of the game. I know what's good for the game. What do you make of this same song and dance seemingly every year around SEC spring meetings where, you know, it feels like Greg Sankey catches a lot of flack?
Yeah, I think Greg Sankey is the best commissioner in all of college football. I think he does a great job. I also think people have to remember his job is to represent the SEC and not college football. So, you know, that's what he gets paid to do. So naturally he's going to do what's in the best interest for his 16 members. And just like every other conference commissioner, I think people see him as the leader of college commissioners. And I think that they expect for him to do things that are for the betterment of the game, but they have to remember that's not his job. And so he's got to do what's best for his 16 members, and that's who pays his bills. And so I have no problem with what he said. Like I said, I think he's the best in the game.
Yeah, well, he was talking about a potential breakoff. At least that's what he said his members have been talking about. Why are we still with the NCAA? What do you think is best long-term for the SEC? Just make as much money as possible? Or how do you feel like they can still keep the culture and the type of sort of, college football? How do you think they can keep that together while still feeding the SEC?
Yeah, I think, you know, people, we've said this for a long time, inside the NCAA and college athletics in general, it's not just football, it's college athletics. We keep trying to fit a square peg into a round hole. The NCAA is an amateur, was built to be an amateur organization, yet we're trying to all of a sudden put professional policies in place and things like that. It's never going to work. So what I have said for years now, it feels like it's like 2 years now, is we keep trying to fit the square peg into the round hole. Why don't we just go find a square hole?
Right.
So, you know, for me, I think it needs to be the Power Four and then some. I definitely think Memphis is one of these. I think it's South Florida. I think it's schools like Colorado State, Tulane, Liberty, schools that can afford it, that can make money, that are making profits in their sports. They need to break away and start their own organization. And inside that organization needs to gain antitrust status from the federal government, and they have to collective bargain with the players. That's the only thing that's going to fix this. Anything else that we do, anything else, court cases, it doesn't matter. Anything else that's done short of that, we're simply putting Band-Aids on bullet wounds.
Yeah.
We're not fixing anything.
Yeah, because we'll just have consistent court cases, litigation, back and forth, every single
right
year,
now,
every single day, quite frankly. There's going to be somebody else out of the woodwork.
Yeah, right now college athletics is being run one federal injunction at a time. And so, and it changes every, like you said, it could be every day, every 2 weeks. It's just, it's really silly.
Yeah. Now, what do you think that looks like? That new breakoff organization? Like, who heads it up? What do you think it's called?
Yeah,
like,
no,
who would be part of that breakoff organization? At least at the top levels, the president, the commissioner, person looking down over the whole thing.
Yeah, I think you see what Kentucky did, and I forgot who, somebody else did it this week too, is you make the athletic department runs as its own LLC, and the athletic department is the quote-unquote owner of the team, okay? And then they can delegate the funds the way they want to. You'll obviously need to have a commissioner, a front office, just like you would have to have in any other organization. But the athletic department would be the owner. Now, how does it look like? It's what this is what I don't understand is it's for the betterment of everybody, not just football, for every student athlete. Because once you take 85 Title IX numbers out of the spot, then you can provide more opportunities for other people. And we talk about TV money and things like that. You're talking about you're no longer going to have, you know, your whatever four games a year that nobody goes to. You're going to have real football games every single week. And high-level games, it's going to drive up the money, it's going to drive up the TV revenue, and to almost double of what it is right now. So you can take half that money, spend it on football, take the other half, and run your rest of your athletic department. It's a very simple answer. It's a very simple answer, but it's something that's going to take time. I think people are worried about, you know, what does this look like? There's going to be change. People are worried about change. Well, there's going to be change. We're already getting it. So... But if you want to know what's for the betterment of everything, that's what's going to have to be done to fix it.
All right. Now, college football playoff is a big discussion. We're at 12 teams right now. They just fixed the seeding from last year. So the top four conference winners aren't getting byes. It'll just be top four teams get byes based on the college football playoff rankings. I think we all sort of agree with that. That was one of the biggest issues we had going last year. Now, I know Boise State's AD not happy with that. He says it's the Boise State rule. Well, it's also the Arizona State rule. But I'll move on from that. When it comes to the college football playoff, there's a lot of different suggestions out there right now. Even at SEC spring meetings, you have Lane Kiffin saying the best system would be 16, and that's the best 16 all at large. SEC ADs seem to think that... you know, they at least want four automatic qualifiers from the SEC, and they want to play nine SEC games on top of that. And then the coaches, I've seen five automatic qualifiers and 11 at-larges. That's what they want to go for. Like, what's your favorite idea or set of circumstances around the college football playoff and how we should play it going forward?
Yeah, I don't think we have to go very far. I think people are trying to reinvent the wheel here. You know, the NCAA or college athletics, however you want to look at it, they've been doing playoffs in football for a long time. We just haven't done it at the FBS level. All they have to do is go one division down and look what the FCS has done.
Sure.
Okay, they have, because it doesn't matter. I've said this since they instituted the playoff in 2015. When you start out with four, guess what they're going to want? They're going to want more. And you're going to get to 12, and guess what? They're going to want more. Oh, no, it's fine. You bet. Now, what are they wanting? They're wanting 16. It's not going to stop at 16.
Right,
they're going to keep going, just like they've done in every they did in the FCS level for the last 25 years. Like, this has happened before, but a lot of fans and people don't really pay attention to a lot of FCS football, so they don't understand it. But the FCS has 24 teams in it, right? In their playoff, they seed the top 16, and in the round one is seeds 9 through 16 get home games. Against teams 17 through 24, and then the first eight seeds get byes the next week. It's a five-week process, but that would give the top 16 teams a home playoff game. The amount of money that would generate to universities and communities by itself is worth the price of admission. Like, you have the first two rounds at that point in time. The first two rounds will be on campus sites, and then you go to the same format they use this year when you go to the last. Part of it being in the New Year's Six games. It's an easy fix. And look, if you're not in the top 24,
right,
you don't need to be. You have nothing to complain about.
I mean, I kind of feel like that about the 12, even.
Right.
I mean, 16, same thing.
Yes, football's. But if you look at the FCS, I think it's like 138 or whatever it is. They have 130 something teams that play football. FBS is what, 133, so it's a similar number. You put 24 in, and you go about your life.
Mm-hmm. Now, I saw Scott Strickland, Florida AD, yesterday, basically say he doesn't like the committee process. Like, where have you been when it comes to postseason, national championship? Like, did you like the computers with the BCS? Do you like a committee? How do you think they should handle this going forward? And do you like the system they have right this second?
Yeah, I probably think, to be fair, I think there probably needs to be a mixture of both, just to be fair. And I understand people that say there doesn't need to be a committee. I understand the people that say there needs to be analytics, whatever. I get all the arguments. And I can't really, I'm not really partial to one way or the other. So
sure.
I think there's kind of a combination of both. With that being said, the committee didn't do themselves any favors this past year. It was the only sport in this past academic year, it was the only sport that didn't really take in the strength of schedule and into consideration. Mm-hmm. Okay. In football, it seemed to be a race to 10. Okay. And it didn't matter who you played or what, you know, you were getting penalized for, even if you lost to a good team, you were being penalized if somebody played a lesser schedule. So strength of schedule was not a very important metric to their eyes. But I think the biggest mistake that football makes, and it's the only sport that does this, it's literally the only sport that does it. Mm-hmm. Basketball doesn't do it. Baseball doesn't do it. Is football releases their polls, their college football playoff, where they see them, like in week 8. And in this past year, and I think I love them. I think they're a great team. But you look at, like, what happened with SMU and Pitt. When that first playoff was released, they were both ranked. Pitt was undefeated. Mm-hmm. And SMU beat them. And SMU got jumped really high in the polls that next week. Well, Pitt ended up losing the rest of the games of their season. They didn't win another game. But SMU was not retroactively punished for being – they jumped so many spots because they beat a highly ranked team. But they don't take the full – they go week by week. They don't punish people for, I guess, wins that – you know, they get credit for good wins early as opposed to at the end of the season, not great wins. So I think football is the only system that does that. It makes absolutely no sense. They should just, if the playoff committee should just keep whatever they got to themselves and don't tell anybody till the end. And I don't think they would have much explaining to do.
No, it feels like, you know, a lot of people that cover the SEC, Greg Sankey, you know, talked about it. And he didn't mention them by name, but he talked about exactly what you're talking about, where not losing is more important than strength of schedule. Let me ask you this question. Should Alabama have gotten in last year? Because it feels like that's sort of the aim of a lot of these conversations.
Well, let me ask you a question. Who was a better team, Alabama or SMU?
Alabama. I can admit that.
If we're going to have a 12-team playoff, I don't care who the 12 teams are. I think the 12 best teams should be in there.
Right.
And so, you know, and so that's just how I am. And I'm not saying Alabama should be in there over Ole Miss, or I think Ole Miss had a gripe. I think Alabama had a gripe. I think South Carolina had a gripe,
sure,
even though South Carolina was 9-3. I think those guys had gripes. So for me, I don't even think I'm not necessarily, and I get why they have to do it because it makes a better product. But sometimes even getting some of these automatic qualifiers aren't going to be in the top 12. There's going to be years,
right.
And so I don't know. I'm not a big. I think you should get on your merit. If you're the top 12, let's put the top 12 in there and go. Now there's going to be years where that's, you know, the SEC doesn't want that. Because there's going to be years where the fourth team is not a top 12 team or top 16 team, whatever. There's going to be years. Not many, but there's going to be. You know, always, and somebody brought it up to Sankey's press conference, but even though he was very, I didn't like the tone of his question to Craig Sankey. I thought it was a little rude, but whoever that was, he did have a valid point is, you know, if you had asked, if we had set this thing in tone for NCAA basketball 10 years ago, you know, there had been a big fight for the SEC to not get very many bids to the basketball tournament, and the ACC should have got a ton. But in the last 10 years, those leagues have totally flipped.
Mm-hmm.
The ACC in basketball wasn't very good this year, and the SEC was. And so I think when you put yourself in a box by, you know, saying, hey, we're going to get this many bids, I don't necessarily think that's what's best for the game. Now, I think it's best for what's best for the SEC. I think it's what's best for the Big Ten and those, but it's not what's best for the game.
Mm-hmm.
So the question is, are we trying to fix the game or are we trying to fix the conferences? That's the question.
So you did ask me that question, and I fully believe Alabama was better than SMU last year. Now, how do we balance that conversation with the losses that Alabama did take? To Vanderbilt, who lost to Georgia State in their out-of-conference, to Oklahoma, who had a really tough year last year, went through a quarterback change, and I saw the bowl game last year. I know some people will say that's not much of a data point, but Navy, you know, beat them up and down the field in that bowl game. So, like, how do we balance the question you asked me, where I fully agree Alabama is the better team than SMU, and the losses that Alabama took, you know, is it a bridge too far for them to make the playoff with those two losses to Oklahoma and to Vandy?
Yeah, I think, again, from a Vandy and Oklahoma deal situation, losing those games, it's playing, and nobody understands until they do it, playing in this league is a complete grind. And it's week in, week out. Everybody's good enough to beat you at any week. so having to show up with your A game every single week, and I don't, by the way, I won't make this crystal clear. I don't care if Alabama got it or not. I'm just trying to state a fact.
I mean,
I lost zero sleep because they didn't get the playoffs.
I don't care.
But I'm just making a point is that when you go, but we're also saying the other way around, we're saying that it's a race to 10 wins, right?
Sure.
That's what got people in. I guess this is more my point. Is it's not about who's the better team. It was about a race to 10 wins.
Yeah.
Okay, so my point is this. If the race is to 10 wins, and we're trying to do what, but I'm trying to do what's better for the game, that means we're punishing teams for playing a tough schedule, correct?
To a certain extent, yes.
Okay, but what would be better for the fans, an 8 SEC schedule or 9?
9.
What would be better for the fans, LSU playing Clemson week one or LSU playing Southeastern Louisiana week one?
Clemson.
Okay, but did you see my point?
So right.
If I'm getting to a race to 10 wins, once I'm not scheduling any of these because a lot of people don't understand.
Yeah, cupcake out of conference for those three games. Why not?
Yeah, these out-of-conference games are scheduled 8, 9, 10 years in advance, right?
Sure.
And so look what happened to Ole Miss. What happened? They lost. Wake said, "No, we're good." What happened? They USC game. It's gone.
Yep.
Why do you think that happened? You think it happened because they were worried about what the fans think? Or they were trying to get to 10 wins.
Yeah.
We'll drop you and we'll try to pick up somebody else. Whatever it is, it's like. Eventually, if we make this about who gets to 10 wins, you're going to have 8 conference games, and you're going to play 4 directional schools every year. And so it's not going to be. And when it's not good for the fans, then the money dries up. And so for me, it's about you got to find this mixture. If you're going to make it about money, which we have, we've made this whole thing about money.
Of course.
So if we're going to make it about money, how do we make the most money? We play a really good schedule every year. And obviously the breakoff would fix that, but you don't want to punish teams for playing quality games.
Mm-hmm.
And so you're not going to play quality games if it's race 10. Look at Memphis, okay? If Memphis is trying to be, I'm being dead serious. If you look at Memphis, and they've had these teams that have been, they've been in the New Year's Six, all right, which would have been a playoff team a few years ago, right?
Mm-hmm.
But if they lose a single game, what happens?
They're done.
But they're done. So what's the benefit for Memphis to go play anybody else
right.
besides their conference? They should play 4 directional schools if that's what we're doing. Is that what's best for the fans, or are we trying to make the playoffs? So you're in this mix. We're in this quandary right now to where are we trying to make money? Are we trying to win games? Because it's really difficult to do both.
Yeah. Now, last thing on this before we actually talk some football heading into next season. But like, how do you feel? And I know that this is a metric that gets, criticized in basketball, but like a net ranking where you have quad one, quad two, quad three wins. How do you feel about something like that being instituted in college football to eliminate some of the confusion we have about strength of schedule? How do you feel about that being a possibility going forward?
I'd be all for it. I mean, I think that goes into what I was talking about earlier. Is like, I think there needs to be a combination of both. I think you do need to have a version of however you come up with it, a net ranking or system or whatever it is. Basically RPI is what that is in baseball, in college baseball, whatever that is. I think there needs to be something in college football that helps alleviate some of that. And it rewards strength of schedule. It's like, when Memphis decides to go and play, they win their league and then they have 3 games, 1 against Alabama, 1 against Georgia, 1 against, Penn State. They don't need to be punished for that. Because they still may be the best group of 5 school out there. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
And so that's how I think there needs to be a combination of both. But right now, the way the committee has shown this past year, that's not what they're doing. They're punishing losses.
Yeah.
Regardless of who it is, they're punishing losses. And so, I think there needs to be, for the betterment of the game and for what's best for the fans and money and everything else, I think there needs to, you don't need to be punished for playing a tough schedule.
Mm-hmm. All right. Talking with Tyler Siski at Tyler Siski on X from the McCready and Siski podcast. You can go check that out. SEC win totals were posted a couple of weeks ago. FanDuel Sportsbook has Alabama at 9.5, Georgia at 9.5, Texas at 9.5, LSU, Ole Miss, Tennessee, all at 8.5. When I ask you who the cream of the crop is in the SEC heading into next year, who is that? Because I think there's this narrative or this assumption that it has to be Texas because they have clarity at the quarterback position as opposed to, you know, Georgia and Alabama, what that's going to look like. Like, who is the top of the class going into next year when it comes to the Southeastern Conference?
Well, I need to put like 9 asterisks on this.
Sure, that's fine.
I think when you predicting college football is as hard as it's ever been because of the roster influx and so much uncertainty and what's going on. So everything changes so much. There's just not any continuity anymore, right? So, but just looking at the rosters, like I've kind of just, my more is just like ranking rosters, like who's got the best players kind of deal. It's not really about how they fit so much as it used to be. But I think Texas is going to be good. I think LSU is going to be really good. I think Georgia is going to be really good. I think Alabama's going to be really good.
Mm-hmm.
Now, they have to play each other too, right?
Sure,
so,
yeah.
You know, who wins, who. But I think those four teams, from a roster standpoint, are really good. I think you got some teams that – the two teams that nobody really expects a lot from that I think are going to be really good is Auburn and Oklahoma,
mm-hmm.
In particular. And I think what Oklahoma's done in the portal – particularly with John Mateer and then offensive coordinator, bringing him over to his coordinator is there before, I guess, John Mateer got there. I think Oklahoma added Jay Dott. I think they're going to be really good. I think Auburn's going to be really good. I mean, if Auburn had a competent quarterback last year, they would have won more games last year. And I think they've got three guys in their quarterback room this year that would have been better than anybody they had in their room last year. So I think the quarterback position is going to help. Auburn this year, I think they'll be much improved, much better than they were a year ago. Tennessee, Tennessee is a team that I really admire from a coaching standpoint, really mm-hmm. admire what Heupel did, kind of standing his ground with Nico.
Yeah.
And that whole situation. With all that being said, it didn't work out. It's not what's best for the team. I don't think either side won on that. I think Nico is going to be worse off than he would have been staying at Tennessee, and I think Tennessee is going to be worse off than they were if Nico was there. So we'll wait and see on them. They got three guys. I'll wait and see who the quarterback is with them. But, I admire what he did. Probably had to be done. But, you know, I hope Tennessee fans remember that, you know.
Right, that's what I'm saying. Like, how much do you think that narrative shifts, though, if we look up and they're 7-5, 8-4?
Well, you know how it's going to shift.
Sure, right.
Fans aren't going to remember that. And so, you know, it's going to be if Tennessee doesn't win as many games as they should, it's going to be, you should have just paid him. You know, they don't care. And so, while I just hope fans remember that I think it was for the better good. And sometimes you get addition by subtraction, and maybe they get great quarterback play, and we're not talking about this.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, for a team that I was really excited to see, and 2025, I'm curious to see them now more than I was excited, if that makes sense.
Yeah, and also I think another story out of that entire, you know, debacle is let's stop with the dads as agents. You know, there's people that can negotiate. They understand value. They understand leverage. And I don't know if dads, you know, do that the best. I think that they think their kid is the greatest thing, as they should. You know, you're a father, you understand that. But at the same time, it just feels like, and we had a situation here in Memphis with P.J. Haggerty. He ends up at on the basketball floor, of course. He ends up at Kansas State for less money than he was asking for. And his dad was sort of his main agent. It feels like we need to have some oversight of that. You know, we talk about guardrails all the time, protecting institutions, universities, trying to get that roster right and understand their roster makeup year to year. But I think we need to have some guardrails for the athletes to protect them from themselves.
Yeah, it's an epidemic. I've talked about that many times. My brother-in-law is actually a real one, And, you know, I hear the horror stories all the time of what's going on out there. But, you know, it would blow your mind that it would blow your mind on the amount of really good players that are making a lot of money that are not being properly represented.
Right.
I just leave it at that.
Yeah, and I talked to a coach who told me that a lot of his roster, most of his roster, has an agent, some type of representation. And he says a majority of them met him on Instagram. That's not how you yeah, meet rough, a good bro. Agent, man. And also, yeah. Like the horror stories that really resonate with me, because I tried to take a run at pro football going to the NFL. And if you know anything about NFL agents, they can only take 3%. That's the most they can take. And the money for them for like a 6th or 7th round draft pick or an undrafted free agent, not much with that 3%. I'm hearing these guys taking as much as 20-25%. That has got to be the first order of business when they sit down and try to put some guardrails on this thing.
Yeah, so just let's give fans background a little bit on this. So when you sign with an agent, contract wise, it's usually always 3% is kind of the standard, right?
Yeah.
And so that's the standard. And also in that contract is usually they have a higher markup for marketing deals. Okay, so it's usually between, I'll just call it 13 and 18% usually, right? And so NIL is technically marketing, right? So there are agents saying, oh, it's standard. NIL is marketing. This is what I do. But it's like the really good ones that are doing contract and marketing, because there's still a large percentage with the quarterbacks and things like that. There's still a large percentage of actual NIL income on some of these players. So like the really high end guys are usually sitting around 5%.
Mm-hmm.
And that does their contract and their NIL, if that makes sense. So
yeah.
it all works out in the wash. But yes, there are some that aren't getting any NIL deals. Example, the big boys up front that are getting raked over the coals for, 15%.
That's nuts. That's just crazy, Tyler. I can't get over that.
There's no regulation like there is. And again, it's another thing that'll break off in collective bargaining with, just like in the NFL, you have, certification, agent certification, things like that would definitely need to be taken into account.
All right, now last thing for you, Tyler, and you can find him on Twitter, by the way, at Tyler Siski. You do a lot of great work with McCready and Siski, but I think my favorite thing is your concession stand reviews. You've been all over the state of Mississippi and northern Mississippi trying a bunch of different concession stands. Do we have a winner thus far? Do we have a number one at the top?
Technically the Masters won, but
okay.
There was no way I was not giving a 9-9 to the Masters.
Sure.
Just by out of principle. I think the best concession stand that I've been to, like actual concession stand that I've been to, is probably Lewisburg.
Nice. Okay.
I think they are the winner, like, of actual concession stands.
What was the fare? What'd they have for you?
So they had a meat and cheese plate that was ridiculous. That's what we had there. It was really good. We've had some good things. I think it was DeSoto Central. We had the fried bologna sandwich. It was really good. We had, when I went on the coast, they kind of cheated a little bit because they knew I was coming or whatever, because they kind of just followed my kids' baseball schedule, I think. And so we had a shrimp boil one time, and then the Conecuh sausage dog. Okay, not enough concession stands. Everybody does hot dogs.
Right.
We need to do more sausage dogs and like Conecuh smoked sausage dogs. I mean, just. That's where it's at.
I'm not familiar on Conecuh.
Oh man, what?
I'm not familiar. That's wrong of me, I guess.
Yeah, Conecuh sausage. I'm sure they have it somewhere. You need to Conecuh sausage would change your life.
what flavor profile? It's spicy?
It's just a brand. It doesn't matter.
Okay, it doesn't matter. I got you.
You can order it on. You can order it online too. So. Conecuh sausage, not a sponsor, by the way. Probably should be, but I grew up on it. It's an Alabama thing. But they're like, we have them in the grocery stores here, so I'm sure they're around there somewhere.
Yeah, Conecuh, if you hear it, McCready and Siski podcast is looking for looking for more advertisers. Always,
yeah, could be.
Yeah,
for sure.
Sure. Well, Tyler, I appreciate it, man. Looking forward to Monday, and I'll see you then.
All right, take care.
Yes, sir. He is Tyler Siski at Tyler Siski on X, CEO of Quick Recruiting, former director of player personnel at Alabama football and Ole Miss, and he is the host, one of the hosts, of the McCready and Siski podcast.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.